Hi, my name is Michaela, and I was born and raised in Indiana. My past education has focused on psychology, business administration, and nonprofit leadership. Tune in to One Fly Trio to hear me talk more about being raised by my grandparents, growing up in small town America, and learning to listen when life put me on the career path I was supposed to be on after graduation.
One Fly Trio is a lively and engaging podcast designed to be your guide and mentor as you navigate the often challenging world of higher education. Your host, Linnell, a college admissions and financial aid guru.
And Rashid, a dedicated advocate for the success of underrepresented communities, team up with a rotating guest host who has lived the first generation, limited income, fly experience.
One Fly Trio will explore all aspects of the college journey, from college essays and financial aid and course selection to social life, internships, post-graduation plans, and more. We take a deep dive into the factors that contribute to success in college and beyond, demystifying areas that have historically been challenging for underrepresented communities.
Each episode is packed with real stories, expert advice, and actionable tips, all delivered in a fun, easy-to-digest format. Join us on One Fly Trio as we break down barriers, challenge stereotypes, and empower students to achieve their dreams. Because when it comes to success,
we're all in this together. Michaela, thank you so much for being with us here today. Really excited about having you on the show.
So hi, everyone. A little bit about me. Let's see. So as you said, my name's Michaela. I use she, they pronouns. If you're watching right now, I have olive skin. I have dark curly hair. And I'm wearing a floral dress at the moment. The olive skin typically lends me to being pretty ethnically ambiguous out there, but I am considered mixed, primarily African-American and white. I was born and raised in Indiana, a Hoosier at heart, and I grew up in a small town about an hour south of Indianapolis called Edinburgh. Typically, people either know we have a really cool outlet mall or they've never heard of us, and that's usually a 50-50 response. But the very cool outlet malls where I worked since I was 16. I grew up in a low-income household with my grandparents. They took me in when I was 3 years old, so I was raised in their home with them in Edinburgh. And we were considered probably like lower middle class, I would say. And they finished school around high school era. So I was also considered first generation whenever I was headed off to college, and that had a really big impact on my application process and how I was admitted to the scholarship program where I met both of you. And that's been a pretty big part of my story, especially as I've entered higher education throughout my career. I think that's about it about me.
Excellent. Since secretly I know a bit more about you, I'm going to pull on a few of those strings. Your upbringing was a bit untraditional in that you did not grow up in a house with one biological parents. Really, as you said, you were raised by your grandparents. How did that affect your path to college?
Yeah, so I had a lot of intersecting pieces that were at work there whenever I was planning to apply for college. So if anybody doesn't know Edinburgh, which isn't hard to do, it's a small town of about 4,000 people. And so I graduated in a class of 63. And at the time, which I'm not going to say what year it was because I'm not going to date myself, but at the time, the statistics were roughly like 20% of high school graduates from our town tried to go on to college, and only about 4 to 6% actually succeeded in getting any type of college degree, whether it's associate's, bachelor's, etc. And so the narrative there that was also kind of influenced my family and my friends and everybody that I was around growing up is you were kind of expected to hopefully get your high school education or a GED of some sort. And then you kind of just stay in the town, have a family, put them through the school system, and everything repeats itself. And so I would say that growing up with my grandparents, they were always very supportive and wanting whatever I wanted. And so whenever I first started making mention, probably like around middle school-ish, of like, hey, I really don't want to stay here forever. There's not a lot to do around here. And I'm pretty tired of being in cornfields and going to small high school basketball games. They were pretty great in saying like, great, do whatever you want to do. And I kind of found out that college was a thing and it could be an option for me. So I'd say that they were as supportive as they could be, but because they had never gone through the system and I didn't have any parents there, that had done anything of the sort of applying, let alone going, it really felt like I was on my own and trying to figure out this thing that everybody kind of referenced, but nobody could tell you more about. And it felt like one of those like secret clubs that people are like, oh, you don't talk about Fight Club. Like you don't talk about college. Like that's a thing for not us. And so I think as I was trying to transition into college, I was really reaching out to find whatever support systems I could. And that ended up being my teachers, since they would have had to go to become teachers in our school system. So my English teacher and my high school choir teacher were really big supports for me and actually decoding some of that and helping me realize that that was truly a path I could go on. And they were also really great at, I think, calming my grandparents' nerves that if I were to do this, it's not like I'm the first one to ever do it necessarily, and I'm not going to go off and they're never going to see me again type of thing. So it was truly, my upbringing in that town was a very wraparound system of communal support.
Excellent. Thank you. I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to the fact that they grow up in what are called, you know, kind of considered untraditional households. It's not just a biological parent or two and some kids. There are all kinds of housing arrangements, and that can really complicate not so much the admissions application part, but really the financial aid part. And, you know, I guess I'll ask you to talk a little bit about that. And for those of you who are living with grandparents, on the financial aid forms, on the free application for federal student aid, it asks you to fill out information for your parents and or step-parent, depending on the situation. And so some people think, well, I live with my grandparents, so I guess I'll just put them in where it says parent. And in fact, that is not what you're supposed to do, because a grandparent is, in fact, not a parent. How did you figure out how to navigate that?
Yeah, well, first, shout out to everybody that was raised by grandparents. We are a cool bunch, and I have found us along the years. Didn't really make me cool growing up. I was kind of the one that was like talking about the Andy Griffith Show when everybody else was talking about going to the softball game. but I have found that we are a unique set of unicorns out there. So shout out to all of them. But yeah, it was a very interesting process to get my financial aid into a place where I could afford to even go to college. And so actually, Linnell was my lovely mentor at the time. And she was the one that debunked all of this information for me. I would have never known any of this was a process that I could have even tried for if she weren't there to be like, hello, here's steps 1, 2, and 3. I found out that based on how my grandparents got custody of me and like the transition from being with my mom over to them, they never really did anything with the paperwork because it was kind of like, who cares? Like, you're going to live with us. And so as long as everybody lets you live with us, it doesn't matter what the court thinks. And so we had never gone through a court process of them actually becoming my guardians. I was technically in this weird temporary custody situation, and then everybody just kind of ignored it because it wasn't high on their priority list. And so Linnell came along and was asking some of these questions, and we figured out that that's where I was. And she said, oh, so what's best for you is to be in a legal guardianship with them. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing and what your living situation is. But if you are in a legal guardianship, you can apply to the FAFSA as an independent student instead of a dependent student. And so I kind of was like,
So okay. Actually, I'm going to just go back, because I know it was a number of years ago that you first applied for financial aid, though, again, we won't talk about that because we're not aging you. So And this is where kind of words, small words matter. You were not in a legal guardianship. And so that is actually, sorry, and you may have said that, but in a case where somebody is your legal guardian and there are court papers to prove it, then in fact, you would use that person's income. But in your case, you didn't have a legal guardian. Like you said, it just never came up as a problem, so nobody addressed it. And so in your case, we were able to have you apply as an independent student, but that is not something for the other students out there thinking, great, I'll just do that. That is actually not a decision you make because it is not part of the normal process. It's kind of considered an exception to the rule. And so there's sort of a special, you kind of have to like zig when everybody else zags in order to pursue that. And at some point, I'm going to do a little mini episode on what happens when you are in a household that is not with biological parents. Because I think that, as you well know, that can get a little bit complicated and a little bit muddy. And as a Hamilton scholar, you no doubt know how I answer every single question that you all would ask me. I get asked all kinds of financial aid questions, and would you like to share the answer with our listeners?
The answer is always, it depends.
And it almost doesn't matter what the question is. And the reason for that is because for every rule in the financial aid world, there's like this whole boatload of exceptions. And so, you know, a lot of times the answer really depends on some of the fine detail and the nuances that are, you know, often lie beneath the surface. And so we will get to that in another episode. But just know that if you are in a situation like Michaela's, talk to your guidance office, call a financial aid office, ask them what you do if we can't provide you with the answer in a timely enough fashion.
So yeah, I do remember those years being a lot of us zigging together. It was one of those things where I think families are often nervous to let other people in, external people in.
Yes.
And so especially when I went to my grandparents and was like, hey, this white lady from New York is asking for your retirement income and our court paperwork. Like, can you just give that to me to give to her? They were like, what? Having those people in your life that you trust and that are really going to help you through the process, absolutely crucial.
And I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things, it's always so awkward for me because I always sort of feel like, hi, we've just met. Can you tell me every fine detail about your family's finances for the past two generations? And people look at me like, who are you, white lady from upstate New York? And I think what happens is when I tell them a little bit about my background, about the work that I've done for the past almost two decades in this, you know, place, that I think people realize you can not trust me, but it doesn't leave you with a lot of options. And I realize that's a leap of faith, and I realize it's really uncomfortable. But I will tell you that there are people out here who are working so hard to increase college access and equity. And I would just say, you know, do your homework, know who you're talking to, but at some point, I think it kind of becomes, you have to trust somebody. And so do as much due diligence as you can and kind of run from there.
Yeah. And I would say I'm a living testament to it works if you find the right person, because since I was able to apply as an independent student, I could go on there and say, I work at our local outlet mall and make no money, let alone money to go to college. And so that made my EFC zero. And that really expanded the options that I had in front of me for what schools I could actually go to.
You know, it warms my heart when I you have spent so much time with me that the financial aid alphabet soup begins to rub off on you. And so I just want to back up and explain that EFC is expected family contribution. Now, prior to this year, EFC was what got calculated when you filled out the free application for federal student aid, which is what every student everywhere fills out. This year, In their wisdom, the government decided to change it from an EFC to an SAI, Student Aid Index. Why the name change? I don't really know. But just so for those of you who are listening, if you go through and you're trying to find EFC and nobody's talking about it anymore, it has been replaced with the SAI. But really what it is what the government thinks you / your family can pay to send you to college. It is not what you might think your family can pay to send you to college, but it's what we have, and so it's what we work with. Yeah, thank you so much for going into that little rabbit hole with me.
That was great. It really was. As you take a step back, Michaela, and you reflect on sort of getting to that point and beginning to consider your options for college, what made you choose where you ultimately went? And where did you ultimately go?
Yeah, so I ended up going to Butler University, which is another small private school in Indianapolis. You'll see that small is a theme with me. And there were a lot of factors that went into that, but primarily, you know, growing up with my grandparents, I took on a lot of roles in their life to have this reciprocal relationship of support. And so we had some of the fun things that other kids don't have to worry about, of like doctor appointments and filling prescriptions and pill cutting and just a lot of great skills that I picked up that nobody's ever going to ask for you to put on your resume. And so I knew 100% that I wanted to get out of my small town, that there was something else out there for me and I wanted to figure out what it was. And I just needed a change of scenery. But I was really nervous to go super far away from them because I always had this incessant fear of, What if something happens to them while I'm gone? Or what if I need something and these are the people that have given me everything up until now and they're not there to give it to me anymore? And so I panic applied to a lot of places, which I don't encourage because it gives you way more anxiety, not way more choices. And there were some places where I applied to like Rutgers in New Jersey and Vanderbilt in Tennessee and places I'd never even heard of, but they sent me that cute little package in the mail. And I was like, heck, if you're sending me mail, then obviously I should go there. And I'm for sure their target audience for those marketing dollars they spend. And then there were some others that, because I'd never heard really about college life before, I was going off of word of mouth of other people. And so I applied to Butler because my high school choir teacher, who I mentioned earlier, was one of my big supporters through high school. That's her alma mater. So she told me that I might like it and I should apply. And without ever visiting the campus or doing research, I was like, what the hey? Okay, I'll do that. And they were the only ones that whenever they told me I had been accepted, I got a personalized admission letter from my counselor that was there. And I wish I could remember their name to this day because I want to thank them. But I remember he put a specific paragraph in my admissions letter that said, I was blown away by your essay. I was blown away by your story. And I really appreciate that you were vulnerable and shared that with us. And we would love to have you on this campus. It also helped that the next paragraph in that admissions letter was a really sick financial aid package. And so both of those together was really my decision. But I just remember really feeling seen by that and really feeling like I can bring my full self to a place. And he just told me right here, it's going to be celebrated. And so that was my big push. But then with it, I was 45 minutes to an hour away from home. It was up in the city, which I had never really explored before, a little small town girl. And so it just hit a lot of those boxes for me that I felt like I could have a new experience without feeling too far out of my comfort zone.
And tell us a little bit more about that transition as you began to transition to a point where you were moving from your small town over to the big city. What were some of the things that stand out in your memory that helped you as you transitioned?
Well, I will say my transition was rough. I had a lot of tears spilt that year, and a lot of tears on the phone with my grandma, who was kind of like, okay, then just come home. I don't understand why this is a big deal right now. But I think it was rough, not even for the academic portion of it, which I think so many students are most terrified of like, can I keep up with the rigor and what's it going to be like and how do I take notes and whatever. That part didn't really bother me. It was really all of the other social pieces that come with trying to find a community on campus. And so where I think I messed up the most, and I would love to go back and do better if I could, is I really kept one foot in both of my worlds. And I never really gave myself time to sit on campus and find my community and force myself into that discomfort. And some of that was out of my control. I still had my full-time job back home. I was working an extra job on campus, so I was up to like 60 hours a week so I could pay the very small amount that I had to pay for my degree, but still an amount I was worried about. And I was going back to make sure my grandparents were okay and my younger brother, and not wanting to miss out on all of those pieces that had been so much a part of my life. And so it felt like I was always going between these two versions of myself, of like still holding on to that small town version and then trying to go up and be this different person on campus. But I missed that critical time of, one, figuring out who I wanted to be around, and also how. Like, it felt like everybody had already found their people, and I somehow missed the memo or the email chain where they all decided who they were going to hang out with. So I would say what helped me the most to get through that was honestly, one, and I know this sounds really cliche, but talking to the Hammies that were in my cohort who were all in a similar boat, because there were a great group of us that were like, yeah, I have no clue what anybody's talking about here. Like, they have experiences and things they're just referencing that I have never heard of. And I'm like trying to Google it, figuring out what conversation we're even on. And so to know that it wasn't just me was super helpful in pushing through it. And I remember the summer between my first year and my sophomore year, I took a deep breath and I got to see my cohort again. And it's like, okay, so that sucked. Let's go back to the drawing table. What do we want to do better next time? And I kept pushing myself out of that comfort zone. And even whenever I felt like, I just want to go home, I just want to be in my own bed, I can drive literally 45 minutes and have that sense of comfort there, I still pushed myself to have new opportunities. And so that's what led to me doing a study abroad trip to Italy, which, talk about, I didn't know what Indianapolis looked like. I just went to a whole other country, which is wild. But then that's where I ended up meeting my best friend, and we've been inseparable since. And so it's that piece of like having the support system that I could rely on to push me to find my new people. And that's ultimately why I ended up staying.
Mm, I love that.
Rashid, can I, before you ask your next question, can I jump in here? You said so many things that were so incredibly valuable. And, you know, Rashid, you and I always use the expression threads to pull on, and we're going to have like ratty clothes that are threadbare, but we will have pulled the threads. And one of the ones I'd like to talk about is that lack of fit, that lack of belonging that you experienced. And I think that, you know, the movies and TV show us that, you know, we go to college and on day two, we meet our forever best friends and we're in each other's weddings and blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't work that way. That is some romanticized notion of college, but yet somehow we all get that message. And so, you know, when Thanksgiving rolls around and you're like, yeah, it's good, you feel alone in that and like you've done something wrong. And it's not until you have that support network of a group of Hamilton scholars or whoever, you know, that group is, where other people are saying it too. And you're like, oh, maybe it's not just me. Maybe I'm not crazy. And I think that that's so important. I think the most important thing to do when you get to a campus is to get involved in something. Actually, research has shown that the number one reason students transfer is not poor grades. It's not money, though that's easy to say because really who's going to check that? It's a lack of fit. It is exactly what you talked about. And so how do you walk through campus doors and start to combat that immediately? And it's things like join the intramural soccer team. It's in the fall. It's not exactly like the peak of competitive athleticism. It's fun. It's a great way to get meet people in your dorm, in your class, whatever it is, but it really starts to combat that potential problem of lack of fit. Sometimes it can be a campus job, it can be a service club, but don't wait until you already feel lonely to join it. I think one of the best things to join kind of out of the gate is kind of one of the first gen groups. Most campuses have clubs and organizations for first gen students, and it's all automatically a subgroup of people you have something in common with. So just a little tip as you move forward.
I thought that was extremely insightful, and you were extremely vulnerable as well, right? So the ability to recognize that you were uncomfortable, so you kept going back to a place of comfort, you know, just to further punctuate and emphasize, we need to step outside of that dome of comfort a little bit to have these new experiences that we've never had before. And that was part of your intentionality around why you chose to go to where you went. And so stepping into these situations, recognizing that it's not going to feel fully comfortable in the beginning, because a lot of it is an unknown variable. It's okay, right? Just tell yourself you'll be okay as you work through it. It's a learning opportunity, and it's going to open up this whole new world to you, and you'll be able to make it through. And I love how you shared, you recognize that about yourself in sort of retrospect between your freshman and sophomore year. And then you challenged yourself by flying out of the country and going to someplace completely different, right? And that even put you in an even more uncomfortable position, right? Because you were so far away from everyone you knew. It really opened up your mind to being able to connect with others around you. And look at that. You made fast friends with someone who you're friends with to this day. And so that is a powerful, powerful testament to the ability to be able to open yourself up to those moments of discomfort and learning and growth and seeing what comes out on the other side. So thank you for sharing that story. As you reflect on Butler and sort of as you were going through your journey, what did you major in? And how did you come to the decision point where you were like, okay, this is what I'm going to major in? And did you graduate with that major that you initially said, okay, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, so I majored in psychology, and I had that major going into Butler. And we're one of the schools where we have, one, it's a liberal arts school, so you have to take core curriculum anyway. And that's one of the other reasons why I wanted to go there. But two, they really request for you to go in with a specific major declared. It's not one of the other schools where you don't declare until sophomore year, for example, and they have some type of like general studies program you can take. But I was very, very nervous about wasting any money, and I was trying to pinch every single penny I possibly could to get the most out of this experience for the lowest bottom line. So I chose psychology not because I knew anything about it, or because I had ever taken a psychology class at all. But it seems like one of those things that you can apply to everything. And I felt like I could come up with some story about how I used my psychology degree into whatever career I ended up going into. And I knew that I had no clue what I wanted to do. And so I was trying to find something that felt practical of I'm going to be able to apply it and I won't have to switch it, and also give myself that time to really uncover what it is that I wanted to do. So I ended up never switching it, but it was a very safe choice. And because I chose it at the beginning and never switched from it, there were a lot of other classes that I think I would have liked a lot more, because we had like a peace and conflict studies major. We had like a critical race major. And looking back, I'm like, wow, that would have been where I found my people. They were all over there in class together, and I was over here learning about how babies talk. Like, that was my problem. but I did what I had to do to make sure that I was getting out of there as quickly as I could.
So I'd like to go back to something you said when you were talking about studying abroad. But, you know, you're sitting here and you're talking about, like, legit pinching every penny because it's what you had to do. You know, talk to us a little bit about what the funding of a trip to a semester in Italy, right? A full semester, you know, how did that happen? And what was Butler's role in that?
Yeah. So it wasn't actually a full semester. It was only 3 weeks in the summer. because I also would not let myself give up a whole semester of classes that I had to take. Was not in my plan.
That's a very Michaela answer.
Yes. Safe and small. Those are my two themes throughout my entire life. Up until now, I've gotten better. But I chose that program because Butler marketed it as, it was through the College of Education, and it was an opportunity that was heavily endowed by an external scholarship organization. And so the majority of the program, if you like got this scholarship through this endowment, was paid for you. And because it was such a short amount of time, it wasn't nearly as much as it would have been if I was a full semester, which now, knowing working at a school, some of your financial aid can transfer to study abroad in some places. And I wish I would have known that as well. But I got the majority of it through a scholarship from Butler, basically also just kind of asking, like I literally walked into the study abroad office and was like, I heard that you had a meeting at some point for people who were interested in study abroad. And I was at work, which is kind of my MO. And basically, I want to go somewhere. Can you just tell me like the next place I could go for pretty cheap? And the poor lady behind the desk was like, okay, yeah, here, and gave me this program, and it worked.
So what I hear you saying is that Butler, perhaps part of the reason you chose Butler was because they did what they needed to do for you to attend there financially.
Yes, 100%. They made it very clear that if I wanted to be on campus, they were going to find a place for me.
I just want to take us back to sort of the major discussion a little bit and make certain our Fly listeners really caught what Michaela had spoken about, right? So she made a decision early on and knew that even though there were these other classes that caught her attention, she opted to continue on the path she was currently on because she wanted to graduate within a certain amount of time. It's okay if on your journey you decide you want to switch or flip. Just recognize that it may extend the period of time you're in school based on whatever the requirements are for that other major you may begin to look at. And so just something for you to bear in mind, the major you may declare when you get in there, or maybe you haven't declared one yet, at some point within the journey, hopefully sooner rather than later, you are able to identify and find what that thing is that truly motivates you and inspires you and you're excited about, so that you can ensure that you don't add a lot of additional time to your college experience. So thank you. Thank you, Michaela, for sharing that.
Well, and Rashid, if it's okay, I'm going to drop an it depends here, a well-timed it depends, because you are absolutely right. It can extend your time, but it doesn't necessarily have to. I think a lot of it depends on how far into your journey do you change your major. If you change your major second semester of your freshman year, the chances that you have to stay longer are a lot less than if you change it at the end of your sophomore year. Yeah, I think it also depends on how disparate the two majors are. If you start as an art history major and decide you want to go the route of mechanical engineering, that is a big switch with a lot of differences in courses with very little overlap. So I will say, and the other thing, a statistic that has always stuck with me, is that between just over two-thirds of college students, close to three-quarters, will change their major at least one time. So know that if you're thinking about transferring it and or changing majors and you're worried about the extra time, go talk to your advisor because or the registrar's office, because it's not a given. I also want to just clarify yet another piece of the alphabet soup that those of us who work in this world kind of use sort of automatically. And that is, Michaela, you mentioned the core curriculum, and that at Butler, there was a core curriculum. And just for our Fly listeners who don't know what that is, most schools in this country will have some type of course requirements, some things that you have to take. So even if you are a music education major, there may still be some kind of quantitative read math requirement. Now, there will be a math requirement for those of us who are not mathletes. But, you know, don't think that just because you don't like a subject means you're totally out of it. What it means is you'll have choices in how you fulfill it. Schools have different core requirements depending on where you go. And some schools have no core requirement, though that is probably much more the exception than the rule. Wesleyan University, Brown University are examples of schools that have no core requirement. And then there are some that have sort of pretty broad core requirements. A University of Rochester, for example, I believe a Johns Hopkins University. And then some schools have very firm core requirements, Columbia University probably being the best example. And most schools are somewhere between Brown and Columbia on a spectrum of how kind of hard and fast those requirements are. So just know that changes from school to school. So you've taken us through this great journey that you did kind of at breakneck speed while doing 12 other things. If you had to go back and do it again, what advice would you give to younger Michaela?
Ooh, that's a great question. A lot. I think the biggest thing, and I've already kind of mentioned it through this theme of my college years, is I did play it so safe that it took me much longer to figure out who I am and what I really value and want to do with my life. And I don't think we've mentioned this yet, but I also ended up fast-tracking my degree so that I graduated in 3 years instead of four, mostly because I tried to appeal financial aid to get additional money and was denied. And so I just decided I was going to leave with my degree in hand. So because I did that, I was taking like 18 to 21 credit hours a semester. I was working a full-time job back home at the outlet mall. I was working 20 hours a week on campus at our Starbucks. I was volunteering at the local children's hospital because I thought that I might want to go into that. I was volunteering at local nursing homes because I thought I might want to go into that. And I had no room to even ponder anything about myself other than my name. Like, there was just no thought happening there.
And can I just interrupt and say, as a college counselor, 10 out of 10 do not recommend this plan. Continue.
Oh, yeah. Big thumbs down. Big thumbs down to that plan. It was brutal. And so because I graduated early, I really gave up my opportunity to take a lot more electives. And those electives, I think, is where I would have found those classes that I really enjoyed and taught me a lot about myself. And I also wish that I would have advocated for myself more because, one, the reason why I was able to graduate early is because I had a great advisor, and that's not the experience of every college student out there. And she was really the one that pushed me through and found these loopholes for me to make that possible. But there were so many other places where I really feel like I could have gone in because she was so receptive to me and said, like, I really want to take this critical race theory class. Is there any way we can make that an opportunity to be my elective for my major? And so it's still going towards that degree, but it's something that I'm still interested in. And I was just always nervous to challenge the system, which is hilarious because I challenge it all the time now. It's like I'm making up for the lost years. But I just wish I would have had more confidence in myself of that I deserved that opportunity and I deserved to have those experiences. And that I didn't have to do it by myself. If I had let more people in and said, like, hey, this is the end goal I'm trying to get to, and this is what I feel is really lacking from my college experience, can you help me out? I just think I would have opened so many more doors for myself instead of just kind of wiping my hands of it and saying, well, I'm just going to get through this, try again next time type of thing, and miss out on all of those great opportunities.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Given the lightning speed at which you did this and the heavy load that you dragged along with you, how would you say that your college experience challenged you and how did it change you?
Y'all have great questions. These are really digging to the core. I would say college challenged me because as much as I knew I wasn't alone, I felt alone. And I was exposed to a lot of different perspectives that I had never been exposed to before. Our whole town is kind of like a hive mind. Like, we all like the same things. We all dislike the same people. It's kind of you're in or you're out. And I didn't even know that I had all those biases that were just ingrained into me until I got to a campus where not everybody's from my town. I was like, wait a second, you don't have the same opinion as me? That's weird. Like, what's wrong with you, type of thing. And so I had a lot of unlearning to do in a very quick amount of time. And it also put me in a situation where, because I didn't know who I was and what I stood for, again, I mentioned in the beginning, I'm mixed and I'm pretty ethnically ambiguous when you look at me. And so my experience in my small white rural town was I always felt too dark for them, or I always felt too different from them because of my skin tone and because of these aspects of me. And then I got up to still white Butler, but more diverse Butler. And all of a sudden, I was too white for everybody else because I was raised so culturally white. And so it just always pushed me in these ways of having to look at parts of myself I had never thought about before, and then feel like I wasn't landing anywhere with what I was finding either. And the biggest challenge of that I see even in the students that I support now is, you know, you look on social media, you look through the Instagram feed, and everybody's having the time of their life out there, and they have their people, and they're going to these great parties, and they're getting everything funded, and they're having the time of their life. And I was like, why am I not getting that same experience? And even though I knew in my head why, and that it's just because of where I was coming at it and the decisions I was having to make, I didn't know that in my heart. And it really affected my confidence and my self-esteem, and I think pushed me further into just wanting to expedite and not have to process those things. And I had no clue how many people project something onto social media that is not their lived experience at all. It's really easy to make a very glossy Instagram feed or whatever the kids are on these days, TikTok or streams or whatever. But that doesn't mean that you are living that happiness every day at all. And so it changed my perspective on myself. And I wish it would have changed my perspective of other people more if I had known what they were really going through.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Thank you.
Yeah, so powerful, so insightful. You have intimated during the course of the discussion the fact that you pursued a certain major, given your constraints and timing. You've done certain things while you were going to school in terms of volunteering because you thought that's where you were going to go. You're doing something completely different now. Can you do our Fly listeners a solid in terms of being able to talk a little bit about where life has brought you today? And how you think your experience in college has helped set you up to get to where you are now.
100%. So plot twist, everyone. I came right back to where I started. So surprise. So right after I graduated college, I drove a U-Haul 59 hours across the country and moved to Seattle. Again, a theme with me. I make very drastic change very fast. And I lived out there for 4.5 years working for the scholarship program that sponsored me, Hamilton, and used that time really to go through some of these identity seeking pieces that I didn't let myself have through college. And so once I felt like I had that very different experience and was able to have that fast paced life where I realized all of these things I wish I had changed, I decided I needed to slow down, and I came back to Indiana to live back in my hometown with a very different mindset this time, very, very different mindset. And throughout the whole thing, I really knew that I wanted to be a support system for people like me going through and tell them all of these things I wish I would have known, because my experience could have been much different than what it was. So when I was working for Hamilton, I was supporting first-gen students, giving them this leadership curriculum and encouraging them to slow down and not do all of the things that I did. And when I came back to Indiana, my heart told me that there was more work that I needed to do closer to home. And so I came back to Butler University again. And I'm now working as the assistant director in the Ephraimson Diversity Center, where I support our 14 identity-affiliated student organizations. I have 8 students who directly report to me to kind of do like advocacy on campus and their own leadership development. I'm leading a DEI Leadership Institute here, and I'm involved in a lot of strategic planning with our division of DEI to hopefully make this place feel like students are easier accessible to having that sense of belonging that I wish I would have had on this campus. So hopefully I'm going to be able to enact some change. Thank you.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think an important part of the collegiate experience and just going on that journey, as much as you're trying to identify the things that do call to you, do speak to you, it's also about understanding through that self-discovery the things you don't like and the things that probably don't resonate with you as much, but you won't know unless you try, right? So thank you so much for sharing your journey through that.
So before we actually let you go, we have a couple of, we call it College Condensed, just some rapid fire questions. We'd love to hear your thoughts on them. I'll start with, what scared you most about going to college?
Parties. And what do you do at a party? And wasting money on things that were not going to lead to my future.
Okay. I would imagine the second of those two was a little harder to resolve than the first of those two, which you probably figured out fairly quickly.
Yeah, I found out everybody's awkward and nobody knows what they're doing. So you just go and stand in a large pile of sweaty people. That's it.
Hilarious. What would you say is a favorite college memory?
Probably that study abroad trip that I did and meeting my best friend on that trip, because when I came back from it, I just had such a fresh perspective on campus that made the last 2 years great. And so many wild experiences abroad that really just expanded my mind and made me ready for that next step.
Beautiful. Love that. Do you have a book, a podcast, a movie, something that you found really impactful that you would like to recommend to our listeners?
A book that changed my life was What Happened to You by Oprah Winfrey. I specifically recommend the audiobook version because she's in conversation with a psychiatrist back and forth, but especially when you go quickly and you have trauma in your childhood and you find out that a lot of your attributes of being an overachiever and being high achieving is actually because you had a pretty rough past. Again, who would have thunk? She does a great job of helping you unpack that and realize there's a process to get through it and you don't always have to live with that trauma. So highly recommend for anybody that finds some of those characteristics in themselves.
Couldn't agree more.
As we come to the end, Michaela, is there anything that you feel like you haven't been able to articulate to our Fly listeners that would be super valuable for them to appreciate or understand as they embark upon their own journeys?
I think I would just reiterate, you can't find your career or your people or your grad school or whatever that thing is in your future that you're working towards without knowing what you want and who you want to be surrounded by. And those play so much more of a part in everything than you could ever possibly imagine. And they don't have to be solid answers. It can be just a feeling, a vibe that you're going off of. It can be characteristics that you're picking up. And as you mentioned earlier, knowing what you don't like, knowing what you don't want, but you can't think that it'll come to you after you achieve that thing. You just have to get across the finish line first. You're not going to be able to get across the finish line and feel the way you want to if you don't find those things out first. So it's not wasted time. It's not wasted money. It's something that is a critical foundation for you to have that happiness that you're searching. And so I hope for anybody that's listening that you get to feel that one day.
Such a great point.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Michaela, it's been an absolute pleasure and honor to host today's episode with you. Your transparency, the way you've shown up and shared your story as sort of a beacon for others to be able to look at as they're trying to figure out their own journeys, I know is going to be immensely helpful. So thank you for your time today.
Yeah,
so grateful to you.
Yeah. Send anybody my way. I'm on Butler's campus.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Michaela.